Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Friday. I always like Fridays. Fridays, we made it through another week. It is August 25th today, and if you are working today and you got to get moving, well, get moving. We'll help you get your day started. We're so glad you've joined us today. In Colossians chapter 2, verse 8, it says, "See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spiritual forces of this world rather than on Christ." That verse is going to come in handy today as we have several conversations, starting with Carmen LeBurge this morning. We're also going to talk to Dr. Jeff Myers at the end of the second hour today, and he's going to talk about the worldviews that are creeping into the Christian mind and how it's influencing us. So that's going to be a great conversation. We have a great show planned today. This was a story that got my attention in Woodbridge, New Jersey. A New Jersey waitress is still in shock after getting an enormous tip from two generous customers. Brianna Siegel is a server at Bar Louie in Woodbridge and says she struck up a conversation Tuesday evening with a lovely couple she had never seen before. They must have been impressed with Siegel because they left her a $1,200 tip on a $20 tab. They wrote her a check and tucked it in an envelope along with an inspirational message saying, "Whenever it gets hard, know God's got you." Spiegel says she's extremely grateful and will use the money to help pay for a new car and nursing school. What a blessing that couple was to that waitress. How nice. Okay, Chinese officials, they're taking parking illegally quite seriously. Instead of towing away a car, blocking a residential entrance, Chinese officials instead hired a crane and lifted the car off a street and placed it on a roof. I don't really know what to say after that. Just say your car's on the roof. You got a whole new set of problems if your car's on the roof. All right, we've got Carmen LeBurge on the studio line. We're going to talk to her and find out what's going on. We're going to probably start a conversation with the fact that ESPN has completely lost their mind. We'll start with that. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Fridays with Carmen is always one of the things I look forward to every week. Carmen LeBurge is the host of Reconnect with Carmen. She's a radio host, soon to be author. I think this is her first book coming out. We're excited to talk about that. She's just a really smart person, and we like talking to her. Good morning, Carmen.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
Well, let's start with ESPN because, you know, sports used to be a place that I used to go to get away from it all.
Well, I think that this ESPN story this week is evidence that there is no getting away from the issues that sort of divide and plague us as a nation. So for your listeners who don't know, this like strangest bit of news this week related to ESPN and a commentator whose name happens to be Robert Lee, and he had been assigned to offer commentary. Again, it's not like it was going to be on, you know, primetime ESPN college game day or something like that. This was going to be a streaming version of ESPN. It was going to cover the UVA William and Mary opening season football game.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert Lee in Charlottesville just seemed a toxic mix for ESPN. And so we now know that in conversation with Robert Lee, they rescheduled him to cover a different game. Well, the response and reaction, I think was not surprising in this, in the current context that we're in. But the issue that I think Christians need to sort of recognize and raise is we all carry a name into the world that is, that belongs to another. And how people respond to the name of Christ is reflective of then how they respond to us as Christians. And am I going to stop carrying the name of Christ into the world just because of the potential backlash against it, because people misunderstand what it means to follow him exclusively as Savior and Lord, or, you know, because he said of himself, he alone is the way and the truth and the life, and that no one comes to the Father except by him. Just because I live in a pluralistic culture where people reject that doesn't mean I'm going to stop bearing the name of Christ into the world.
Well said. It is a little crazy, though, that they are not only picking on Robert Lee's name, but they are actually have located him to another game just so he's out of Charlottesville. And then I heard that USC's mascot, which is a horse, that's in trouble now, too, because the horse's name is Traveler, which also happens to be the name of Robert E. Lee's horse.
Yeah, I'm like rubbing my eyes and forehead right now. I don't really know exactly where this ends. I do know that the Smithsonian's refusal to remove the bust of Margaret Sanger, who people may not recognize her name, but Margaret Sanger is the racist eugenicist who's behind Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that if you are a Christian and you want to enter into this conversation about how far are we going to go in terms of sanitizing our current environment from all evidence that, you know, there have been people of racist viewpoints in the past who have risen to prominence in American history, and American culture and American leadership, Margaret Sanger is going to have to go, and it will be absolutely the height of hypocrisy if what ultimately happens is that the left refuses to have Margaret Sanger's bust removed from places or statues and monuments to her, because after all, we certainly worship abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we don't mean Margaret Sanger. We don't mean, that killing children who happen to be of a darker pigmentation, we don't mean that's wrong. So I do think that the hypocrisy of the left is going to be, you know, brought to the fore. We certainly, you know, in this conversation, Nancy Pelosi has been, you know, out there on the forefront, you know, stomping around that. Well, her dad actually is one of the people who, you know, a number of years ago installed and gave words of celebration in the installment of a monument to Robert E. Lee. So, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy. People don't know their own family histories well enough really to engage in these conversations in a meaningful way. We certainly don't know American history well enough. And so I think for Christians, we just keep backing up to the same points. We just keep making the same points that, you know, racism is wrong because God is real. And racism is, it's hard to argue against it if we are people who have evolved and might makes right and the fittest survive. So it is an opportunity for Christians to engage the culture in really meaningful conversations if we can turn down the heat.
Yeah. Carmen, let's talk about the violence at Charlottesville and how it actually got the ACLU to do a little bit of soul searching.
Yeah, so I think that if folks aren't paying attention to what's going on with the ACLU, this is a real opportunity to recognize the uncertainty that grows out of wanting to be popular instead of just standing your ground and you know what's right.
Mm-hmm.
So the American Civil Liberties Union has been on the forefront of the defense of free speech. That has been their thing. And now, you know, it's sort of like, well, maybe we don't mean that speech. Well, and if you don't like it and we like you, and we really want to be sure we're on your side, if your side isn't really a free speech side, then, well, maybe we jettison defending free speech so that we can be sure that we stand with the people we want to stand with. That is, that's pretty strong evidence that the ACLU is simply bowing the knee to,
mm-hmm.
To a particular group. So what happened is that the ACLU, which has offered a strict defense of the First Amendment, sort of like no matter how offensive the speech has been over the course of time, they now have these critics who are saying, hey, the ACLU has blood on its hands because it's the ACLU that, you know, allows these marches to go forward because they actually defend the right of people with terrible ideas to, you know, to have the right to those ideas. So we see them certainly backing away from their positions. And I would say the first step in that direction is that, hey, we're no longer going to defend the right of free speech for people who want to bring guns to their, you know, want to use the carrying around of a gun as part of that demonstration of free speech. So that's where they're choosing to draw the line. That'll be an interesting line for them to defend at some point. But the other thing going on with the ACLU that folks might find an entertaining opportunity for conversation, the ACLU posted a tweet of this, like, it's a baby. They say she's three. I don't think she could possibly be three. She's cute as a button. She's wearing a onesie that says, you know, it's an acknowledgement that, you know, she's for free speech. And the ACLU tweet was, this is the future we want. Well, the immediate backlash was, this, you know, question mark, this is the future we want? You know, she's white. We want a white kid waving a flag? And so the racist following in terms of anti-whiteness is being evidenced all over the ACLU's Twitter feed, and they then in turn sort of accepted that viewpoint and said, oh yeah, you know, thanks for calling us out on that. Obviously, we don't mean that we prefer a future that, you know, for this white child. I mean, it's just crazy what's going on out there today. But people need to be prepared for it.
Yeah, good point. And that is crazy. All right, Carmen, I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk about how transgender is in kindergarten right now and how a teacher decided to talk about it in a lesson without any parental approval. We'll take a short break at 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back. Good morning. It's 19 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. I'm speaking to Carmen LaBurge. You can go check her out at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Bringing God back into the conversation. That's what she does so well. Says that right on her website. Okay, Carmen, let's talk about this episode at a kindergarten and how the teacher sort of took a little bit of a liberty giving a lesson on transgenderism.
I so wish this was being interpreted as one teacher in one isolated case taking inappropriate liberties. You have offered the sane interpretation of events, but that is not the interpretation of events that's unfolding. So to bring people up to speed, and in fact, you in Minnesota have the seminal case in this issue. So there's this is an issue with charter schools and how charter schools are at liberty, not only at liberty, but now under legal mandate in Minnesota to teach transgender identity material with expressly without parental notification all the way down to the preschool age level, because the sexual orientation gender identity militants believe that, you know, if you can influence the child when they're three or four to accept transgenderism, then, you know, you have really won the social ballgame. So in charter schools, not only are teachers teaching this material, they're teaching it at very young ages, and they're teaching it without parental notification. Because unlike sex ed, so they're going to teach sex ed, you have to not only have parental notification, but in many states, you have to have parental consent. This is now on transgender education and transgenderism. What they're saying is this is not only protected material, like these are things that teachers not only are free to teach, we think teachers must teach it, and we think parents must not be notified because parents do not have the right to say they don't want their children exposed to this material because that's bias. And you cannot even have a religious or conscience protection on these issues. So that's expressly what is now accepted as a legal has a legal solution in Minnesota, and that is going to unfold across the country in much the same way. So because SOGI is now considered this protected class in many places, it means that parents cannot even have a religious objection to their child being taught these things. You can't be notified in advance that your child is going to be taught these things. And so here's what happened in California this past week. Kids go off to kindergarten, and the teacher reads a series of books that are in celebration of transgenderism. And during this process, one of the boys in the class adapts himself to becoming a girl, essentially. Well, the children go home. Their parents have no idea this is going on. Oh, and that was the gender reveal, that this boy is now a girl, and we're going to call him by his girl name, and we're going to treat him as a girl. Well, these little children went home terrified that, you know, I might go into the bathroom and I might come out a boy. I mean, I'm a little girl, and I'm afraid. I am now afraid that I might, this happens. And so parents were obviously outraged. What they learned when they went to the school board meeting was, it's fine for you to be outraged, but your outrage is wrong. We have determined that this is right, and we are going to continue teaching this. Not only can you not object to this being taught, you can't keep your kid out of school when we teach it.
Wow. Unbelievable,
yeah, I mean,
Carmen.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a boon for, not only expressly Christian institutions, but it's a great reminder that even if you thought you could do sort of a Christian education model through the charter school program in the United States, anything that's going to be federally funded is absolutely going to include this educational material. And so people just have to know that. And our solutions for educating kids is just going to have to, it's going to have to be different.
When I read this article and it said, my daughter came home crying and shaking, so afraid she could turn into a boy.
Yeah, and she's five. So who's traumatized in this case?
The little girl.
Now, obviously. Yeah, obviously that child. But who is the school district absolutely lining up in celebration and defense of? And who are they saying that now these mean parents are responsible for shaming? It's the quote unquote transgender child. Mm-hmm. It's the child who is suffering from gender dysphoria or growing up in a house where there's so much confusion that he's being encouraged to emasculate himself. However you want to think about it, it's the boom is not falling here upon those parents who are not getting their gender dysphoric child the help he needs. Instead, the boom is falling on parents who don't want their children traumatized by the accommodation of the gender dysphoria of this other student.
Mm-hmm. I remember coming home from school one day crying and shaking because the teachers wanted me to do homework. So we've come a long ways for sure. I don't think kids at this age should even have an understanding of these concepts and ideas. Do you agree with that, or they're 5 years old?
So I completely agree with you that this is a subject matter that is age inappropriate. However, you and I both know that the most malleable time in terms of the molding and the shaping of a child's worldview is precisely this particular little span of age when they're 3 to 11.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am a person who understands educational theory, particularly if I'm a person who advocates sort of Dewey's notion that children need to be saved from their crazy religious parents, then I am absolutely going to advocate that these things happen in the school system. Now, obviously, I don't share that viewpoint. And so Christian parents who are not homeschooling their kids or whose kids are not in an expressly Christian school where the curriculum is aligned with what the Bible teaches about human creation and human dignity and gender, you're going to have to do homework. You are absolutely going to have to do homework, and it's going to have to be every day. You're going to have to be vigilant. You're going to have to read everything that your child is reading in class, and you're going to have to combat, you're going to have to openly work against that in terms of your child's understanding of your Christian worldview and help them to adopt that. Scripture gives us plenty of counsel on this. If folks, want to remember, Proverbs is basically encouragement in how to raise your child in wisdom. And it's not in the ways of the world, and there's a lot of foolishness out there. Certainly Deuteronomy is full of instruction about what it is we're supposed to be teaching our children and how we're binding that to their hearts and minds.
Mm-hmm.
So, we don't lack for information on this. I do think we probably are not awake to the severity of the threat, and we're probably not, at this point, mobilized in response to it.
Yeah, Carmen, we have to run, but you do have a resource for parents on your website, don't you, on this?
Yeah, absolutely. If folks go to reconnectwithcarmen.com, we've got a gender identity and gender confusion resource. It's posted there as a special report, and that'll be, I think, really helpful to folks who are looking for ways to talk to their kids about these issues.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Carmen. Couple minutes before the half hour. It's 27 minutes after. We'll be back in a minute.
Starting your day with faith, hope, and clarity. The Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
It is half past the hour. We're going to take a break for news. When we come back at 20 minutes until the hour, Dr. Rosemary Stein is going to be with us. She's going to talk about a movement called Wait Until 8. We'll find out what that is in just a few minutes. Uh-huh. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here. You know, it can be difficult for Christians to live out their faith in the workplace, unless you work at Faith Radio. Dr. Bill Peel clarifies what effective evangelism looks like specifically at work.
One of the first things that you need to realize is that evangelism is a process and not an event. And actually confusing that can get you into serious trouble, because evangelism sometimes doesn't stop to think about what God is doing in the other person's life. Sometimes we're a little more interested in getting the message out, and that actually can be quite inappropriate in the workplace. And 1 Peter 3:15 gives us some real important insights in there. Leading up to that verse, it's a wonderful verse that's quoted often by evangelists, that we're to always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within us. But leading up to that passage is a whole lifestyle that actually attracts people's attention to our faith. And then in verse 15, the part that I didn't quote there was that we're supposed to give a reason for the hope within us when asked. And so the first part of sharing your faith in the workplace is living your faith out in front of people, such that it actually makes our faith in Jesus Christ apparent and transparent to people. It begins with the quality of our work. It issues forth in the character of our life, of Christ's likeness, and then in real compassion for people before we begin to talk wisely about our faith. And so that's how it really starts.
If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com and type in Dr. Bill Peel, P-E-E-L, and it'll take you to that interview. It's called Living with Faith. We'll take a short break, and Dr. Rosemary Stein is with us on the studio line right now. We will talk to her about Wait Until 8 movement. Be back in a minute.
You can't play with life without destructive consequences. This is Jim Garlow. Genetic engineering is the desire by some to ultimately create a superhuman. Resistance to disease, genius abilities, longer lifespan, superhuman strength, beautiful features, unusually skilled. Given enough time and experimentation, all are thought to be within science's grasp. A superhuman, the pinnacle of man's intentional evolutionary progress. Ecclesiastes 3:14 reminds us, everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken away from it. God does it so that men will revere Him. Going beyond God's designed limits that He created from the very beginning will not end well for anyone. And it will not glorify the one that created the natural order for our good. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
person go down in a most delightful way.
21 minutes until the top of the hour. And, of course, that theme song is the walk-on music for Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Good morning, Dr. Rose.
I was just tap dancing. Give me a moment.
Makes me so happy. All right. Speaking of happiness and unhappiness, let's start with a topic that is going to make a lot of preteens unhappy.
Oh, yes. Taking those cell phones away. Ooh. Every day I have a little bit of this conversation. And they believe that it's the ultimate torture to not have their cell phone. They look over anxiously at mom and dad when I say we need to disconnect.
Oof.
Sometimes they even have meltdowns right in the clinic.
Yeah.
And that tells me that the need for it is even bigger.
And this pledge is picking up some steam across social media, which is wait until eighth grade to get a smartphone. And it is making kids nuts, isn't it?
Well, it is, because there's so much peer pressure, and it's negative peer pressure now with parents to compete with being the coolest parent. And the coolest parent is unfortunately the person who gives the kid the cell phone and all the electronic devices that the kid wants. But wouldn't it be really cool to have the anti-peer competition? And say, okay, the later we can wait, if we can hold out after all the other buddies, we're going to have, you know, maybe a trip to Disney World, maybe something special that you can offer. Not that it's good to bribe your family that way, but the more that you postpone, the less the kids are connected to electronics, I believe the less potential to getting addicted to electronics that they will have.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, you know, I realize that what frustrates a kid is usually what they brag about as an adult. Where they go, my parents never let me have a cell phone, and they're bragging about it like I had the coolest parents ever. And because I didn't have a cell phone until eighth grade or ninth grade, I was able to do this and that. And they find it as a source of pride all of a sudden. So what they were frustrating with as a kid, now as an adult, they're so excited about.
I think that's a really great point to remember, that we aren't being the bad guy. We're actually being the good guy. And once again, I think I've used this phrase, but don't postpone the good that you can give your child because of today. Make sure that you're watching out for tomorrow. And when we do that, then we're doing the right thing for our kid.
Mm-hmm.
But we're swept into feeling guilty about withdrawing something for today that will value tomorrow for your child.
Mm-hmm. I mean, almost handing a child a phone, you should be saying, welcome to the world of cyberbullying and sleep deprivation. Because that's what you're going to do.
That's right. Welcome to the world of decreased brain activity.
Oh,
how about that?
You had to one-up me, didn't you?
I don't value your brain, so I'm going to give you this cell phone.
Oof. You know, you have soldiers that come back from war, and sometimes they need service dogs to keep their anxiety down. I think cell phones have become almost like service dogs for kids, because I see them, and you try to remove that, and they completely melt down.
Yeah, so exactly. And so the more that we postpone the giving a cell phone to a child, the better that child will do. Without a doubt. I mean, I have absolutely no doubt that statement is 100% true for 100% of children.
Okay, now as a physician, we can talk about what's actually going on in the brain with things like cell phones, but there's also video games that are horribly bad for your brain, aren't there?
Absolutely. I mean, and there are some that are worse than others. I don't recommend any electronic games at all, and I think that going to electronics for our education is a mistake, but some are worse than others. Obviously, ones that are hostile or aggressive are the worst. But anything that simulates reality is probably not good either. I remember a few years ago, I had a little kid, and he was not speaking at the age of three and a half. And the TV turned on to the Teletubbies, and he started speaking in Teletubby language and squeaking. So he was communicating okay in Teletubby language, but he was not communicating in human language. So it's all the different spectrums of brain damage or brain injury that we're incurring because of our electronic devices.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, what would you say to exhausted parents that do what works?
Sometimes you hand a
child a cell phone and you go, oh, they stopped complaining. They're actually quiet now for a little bit.
And I see that a lot in the office where the parent is trying to speak with me and the kid is acting up. And so the easy way to distract the child and get him to stop so that we can speak is to hand the cell phone over. And then the parent looks at me and says, oh, this is the only place I do it. And we both know that, you know, that's not exactly true. But take away that temptation. The place to try that out is not in public. It's at home so that you don't get embarrassed. But we need to be finding our children other things to do and entertain them than to hand over the cell phone constantly like we're doing today.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of what goes on with an overuse of phones and tablets and electronic screens is something called virtual autism. I want to ask you about that after the break. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from Christian Medical and Dental Association. We'll be right back. Good morning. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. If you have to be at work at the top of the hour, get moving. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from Christian Medical and Dental Association. And there is a condition called, Autistic Spectrum Disorder, ASD. And that could dramatically be a result of too much exposure to electronic screens. Do say
That's
more
right.
about that,
and-
Dr. Stein.
Well, and if you remember, those of us that are a little older, back in the 70s and maybe even early 80s, autism was virtually unheard of. We knew that it existed, but we didn't have family members or friends that we could identify were autistic. Well, you spring forward to today, and one in up to 50 children have been diagnosed with a form of autism or a part of the autism spectrum, and that's the autism spectrum disorder. Well, what is it that's going on? What is making this happen? Well, that's when TVs became commonplace in people's homes, technology, and we're parking our children in front of these electronics. Well, they're scrambling our children's brains, and they're making it so that they are not able to communicate. They are not social creatures anymore. So it really feeds into that part of the brain that makes them behave autistically. We can actually, for the most part, most children that are autistic or have autistic features, we can conduct them. We can challenge them out of many of these behaviors, but we're sort of feeding into the behavior. We're making them more complacent in that lack of social skill when they are connected to an electronic device.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's switch subjects here a little bit. There's been elementary schools, and they have to remove conformity posters.
Well, it works interestingly both ways, because conformity means that not to submit. It means that you're not going to challenge in your brain, that you're not going to make any waves, and that you're not going to think for yourself. And if at the end what we're doing by schooling them is not to educate their brain, well, we're doing a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that conformity is a good thing. I think that actually to teach our children just to conform is not good. We want our children to submit to authority, but we don't want them necessarily to conform and be all sort of equal and think the same and not challenge themselves to improve and to think better than the rest of them. Kids that all conform together become a target for bullying and for feeling like a victim. And we never want our children to feel like they have to have self-pity and feel like victims in life.
Yeah. Dr. Rose, I have a caller on the line. And, of course, the Early Morning Late Show has the smartest callers in the world. And it's Dan from Hugo. Good morning, Dan. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Dr. Rose.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. It's more of a comment and just weighing in the conversation.
Awesome.
I've worked in the technology industry for many years, and I just want us to be cautious about making some absolute rules about the use of this technology. And it's more foundational in terms of making sure it doesn't become an idol, making sure that the good comes out of it and there is good coming out of it. There's a lot of evangelism that happens through and outreach that happens through these devices. There's a lot of energy being spent toward Christian multimedia to reach these audiences that are more familiar with using these devices. So I just got back from a trip taking a team to Australia for a robotics competition. These are your eighth grade boys. So there's a lot of learning, a lot of growth, a lot of good that comes out of the use of this. And I think, again, it just goes back to Scripture where we're talking about making sure that we're not having this become an idol and become something that dominates our thoughts and our actions.
Okay.
And I guess I'll leave it with that.
Thank you so much for the call, Dan. I appreciate your call. Dr. Rose, you have a comment about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thank you so much, Dan. And you're so right in that we need to have balance in our lives, especially as Christians. And my point about electronics and children is that the later that we introduce it, the better their brains will do. Obviously, things that they build and they can interconnect themselves and they express their creativity is something that is quite different from just sitting them in front of devices and having them do chats or even games like Minecraft. But balance is very important. But the thing is that kids' brains connect in a unique way. They're not like adult brains. They connect in a very different way than our brains. They actually go into that world. And if you're going into a different world than the actual world that God has made, that's never going to be good for any child. So that's what we need to be cautious of when that child thinks that that world is the reality.
That is a great balance to the conversation, Dr. Rose. I believe in what Dan said as well, because technology does amazing things and opens up learning opportunities for kids probably unlike ever before. However, some of the cautions I have growing up without technology was for every hour that you're spending on some device, and if you're not learning and maybe you're just wasting time or doing a game, it also means you're not outside running around, being involved in group sports, activities, playfulness, and getting exercise, which I see a lot of kids are at a disadvantage today.
I agree, and they're not as sociable in positive ways as they used to be because they are so stuck on communicating virtually.
Mm-hmm. So take the good with the bad. Obviously, we don't want kids to be to get devices at such a young age that their brains start to get rewired in a strange way. We just want kids to be kids, and we hope that they lead a well-balanced life where they get out and they exercise and they do stuff.
That's right. That's a well-balanced kid.
Yeah. Okay, we just got a couple of minutes left. So I gave my kid a PTSD T-shirt, and making her wear a get-along shirt. Talk about that little story. That was very cute.
Well, and I actually had exercised that in the clinic a few months ago where two kids were just absolutely not getting along.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent asked me, what can we do so that these kids start working together? And you see that the relationship for the rest of the life is fostered in the home. If you're going to make your kids compete against each other and not help each other out, for the most part, many times that sort of trend in that relationship will continue for the rest of their lives. Build people who can work together, who will be there to hold each other up, even when we, you know, mom and dad are gone. And it seems like a bit of a torture to put the kids together in a T-shirt to make them work together, but it's really not. Because once they understand, you know, we have to sort of think with one head. We have to work. You're right-handed, and I'm right-handed too, but I'm going to have to work with my left hand. That will help your kid. And it seems like the kid just has a complete conniption because they can't do it at the beginning. But think about so many things that you worked through and you exercised and you got better at. And what you're just trying to do is to challenge your kids to be able to work together and to think as a team. So I think that was an absolutely fantastic way to get two kids who can't get along to work together.
Yeah, and we have to find ways to just show them that this is how we do things, and we have to get along even when we're not getting along. So it's a great topic, and Dr. Rose, I always appreciate your perspective, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Thank you so much. All right, it's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break, and then look forward to hour two of the Early Morning Late Show. We'll be back in a minute. All right, that wraps up hour one. We've got a great second hour coming up with Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. We're going to talk about some movies, and then also we've got Dr. Jeff Myers from Summit Ministries, and he's written a book about how worldviews are creeping into the Christian mind. So we're going to talk about how to defend that and be prepared. We'll take a short break and start hour two in just a few minutes. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.